welcome. This is Passionate Nutrition Radio, and I'm Jennifer, your host. I've been a nutritionist for more than a decade, and I'm the founder of Passionate Nutrition, a nutrition practice with 9 locations throughout the greater Seattle area. Yes, we have recently added Fremont to the list. Since beginning my practice, I've helped clients lower cholesterol, combat depression, treat cancer, reverse diabetes, lose weight, and completely transform their lives with nutrition. Food is medicine, and on Passionate Nutrition, we'll answer your nutritional questions and talk about what foods promote wellness and vitality. This is a call-in show, so please feel free to reach out to us at any time throughout the show. We welcome any and all questions and stories you'd like to share, and we'd love to hear from you. Our call-in number is 425-373-5527 or toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-KKNW. That's 5569. Thank you so much for joining us today. So we've dedicated today's show to yoga, nutrition, and body love. We spend a lot of time talking specifically about food and nutrition on the show, but body love and self-acceptance are really at the root of everything that we do at Passionate Nutrition. Feeding yourself foods that truly nourish you is an act of self-love. And in my work as a nutritionist at Passionate Nutrition and also a co-founder of the International Eating Disorders Institute, I'm dedicated to helping clients achieve their optimal health on all levels, and that's physically, mentally, and emotionally. And really, they're all tied together. And nutrition is a powerful tool for creating real shifts in our lives, but it's not the only tool. So on today's show, I've invited Jamie Silverstein, a U.S. Olympian in ice dancing, an eating disorder recovery advocate, Lululemon ambassador, and the owner of the Grinning Yogi Yoga Studio on Capitol Hill. And she has a lot of impressive titles after her name. So during today's show, we'll share nutritional and yogic tools and help to build awareness, confidence, and hopefully feel more empowered in your body. So Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
So Jamie, I know that a lot of listeners are really going to benefit from the insights that you can bring to the topic of body love and the yoga connection. But before we dive in, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I think my whole life's drama is kind of about finding body love. And I don't always have it, but I'm really open to the discussion. I think it's an important one that we should have as you know, humans, and especially as women. For me, I was skating ever since I was a little girl. And eventually I moved to Michigan, and I got a partner and became an ice dancer. And it was about probably when I was about 15, when things got really heightened, I developed some eating disorder symptoms that kind of ran my life amok. Eventually, for me, I decided to take an active step, and I went towards college and recovery, and that benefited me a lot. And I was able to go back with a different mindset, and I went to the Olympics in 2006. And then kind of simultaneously to me understanding what was going on for my body and for my sports, I also started practicing yoga. And at one point, I had not thought I was going to go to college, at least not when it was age appropriate. So I got certified as a yoga instructor when I was like 17. And then the thing that's been most interesting for me is that on and off throughout my life, I've definitely kind of changed my relationship with my idea of exercise and my idea of what it means to be in my body. But the yoga practice has been supportive no matter kind of where I was at with that, you know, emotional kind of processing. So I just love it.
Well, getting certified at 17, that's young. I'm guessing that the peers in your training were quite a bit older.
Yeah, it was an interesting group, and I don't think anyone took me pretty seriously, which is fine. And I remember, like, my grandma helped me pay for training, and it was really sweet. I don't think I realized what a kind of profound thing the relationship to yoga would become in my life. And then since that time, I've gotten trained more and done different certifications. But, yeah, sometimes stuff just finds you. I started yoga, I was 15, and I was in Michigan. And it's pretty Midwest, even though it's Michigan. And my mom thought it was a cult. So, like, that was how I rebelled. I went to yoga.
And when did you first start ice skating and dancing?
Oh, so I started ice dancing when I was about 3. I was really, really quite young. And I think some of the instructors told my mom, like, bring her back when she's older. And she brought me back for the next, like, enrollment. And then I've been skating on and off my entire life. Most recently, I performed with Ice Theater of New York about 2 years ago. But since kind of opening my business and settling in Seattle, I do less work in the skating field.
And what inspired your shift from ice skating and ice dancing to becoming a yoga instructor? I mean, taking the full shift, because it sounds like they were together for quite a while. You were doing both.
I was doing both. I feel like for me, skating is a very kind of unique culture. And I think even when I was training and very much a skater, whatever that means, I always in the back of my head like had mind to go to college and really wanted to kind of claim this larger sense of identity. I feel like so much, and this also speaks to eating disorders, there's so much tension between like how we understand ourselves and who we are. So like just being a skater or just kind of working through these smaller aspects for me didn't really feel nourishing. And then I transitioned to yoga because I got to this place and it was either get my master's in social work and kind of work towards becoming a counselor or open a business. And I got a student loan package and I was like, oh, I don't want to do this. But the business kind of came naturally. I think yoga's, like I said, it's been a friend to me throughout whatever identity I'm kind of in. And that means that it's something I feel like I can sustain moving forward.
You know, that's really interesting to realize at such a young age what nourished you and what didn't. You know, it seems like it takes a lot of life experience and wisdom and, you know, years under our belt before we get to that place. I mean, how do you think you got there at such a young age?
Quite honestly, I really think I learned by making a lot of mistakes and by kind of having a lot of these dramatic events in my life that didn't work, you mm-hmm. know? And then you kind of have to step back and say, well, where am I in all of this? I know for a long time, especially being a competitive athlete and a skater, I really identified myself as a body, right, as what I was doing with my body. And I know we'll talk about this a little bit later, about this idea of body love. But for me, the more I was able to kind of find where I fit underneath what I was doing, or it didn't matter so much about how I looked in that moment, the more I was able to make choices that were nourishing for me.
Okay. And why did you decide to open the Grinning Yogi on Capitol Hill?
Well, two reasons. I came to Seattle because of a boy, right? Isn't it funny how life does that? And he's an awesome person. He's not my boy anymore. And then, quite honestly, I opened the studio because I had been visiting him at the time. It was around Thanksgiving. And I'm like a little yoga rat. So whenever I'm in a new place, I totally want to check out the scene and take a class. And at the time, him and I went together to this class, and it was this big gratitude class for Thanksgiving. And there was a teacher, and I'm not going to mention any names, but the invitation was that we should do like a set of a wheel. It's like a backbend, but a set of this backbend for everything we were going to eat that day at Thanksgiving. Yeah. And I had a lot of curse words in my brain at that moment, partially because I do a lot of work with advocacy and I'm aware of how that, like even that suggestion is really toxic. But also this person completely kind of articulated a way that I had been used to thinking and had really kind of stepped aside from. And that trip, I think it was the Friday after Thanksgiving, I started looking on Craigslist, like, there's got to be a space that I can just open full of, like, love and what I do. Because I don't think we should avoid our body, but I also don't think we should have some kind of, like, competition within. Like, I need to do this so that I can. And that's kind of how the Grinning Yogi came to fruition.
And can you tell our listeners about the work that you do as an eating disorder recovery advocate? I mean, what does that entail?
Yeah, so that's been a lot of things at different points. Right now, I do work specifically teaching yoga in a more therapeutic way at the Moore Center Clinic, which is a eating disorder partial hospitalization program. I also do a lot of writing. I write for Mind Body Green. I write for Do You Yoga. I have a column for them. I've been featured in like a yoga journal capacity or Yoga Dork. I wrote a big open letter to the fitness community around the holiday season last season about kind of being mindful about how we motivate our clients, because especially at holiday time, there's so much suggestion of, well, you need to get in because you're going to a party later, and so much suggestion about kind of keeping yourself on a leash with, you know, how you look or how you eat. I've also been working on this Be Yoga project, which is kind of a journaling and also yoga practice combined. So you become your own intention. I don't know how much yoga you've done, But in yoga so often, they'll be like, come to the top of your mat and set an intention. And I remember I've had this moment of being like, I don't know what that means. And I'm a yoga teacher, right? So a lot of kind of these journaling practices that you can do, and then you can practice and kind of put them in your body, which I think is really powerful. But even if you're not into yoga or you don't have the time, practices you can take with you. And I'll be sharing that in New Jersey actually next week. I'm doing a workshop out there. So it's a lot of different things. And we'll see what happens next.
Right. And yoga has definitely gotten really popular over the years, but the word yoga can mean really different things to a lot of people. So what kind of yoga do you teach?
Ooh, that's a really hard question. This is interesting because I feel like a lot of people nowadays do yoga, but some of the idea of where this comes from is really abstracted. So yoga, you know, and you can ask what the word means. And the word is really about connection. It's about kind of bringing things together. So how can I bring myself to myself, really? The issue with that nowadays is, like, our yoga culture has become very physicalized. So people practice yoga, but what they're practicing is asana, is poses. So I go to a yoga class, I go to my gym, and I do these shapes with my body. And that's definitely yoga, but doing poses and connecting are two really different things. So you can make shapes with your body, or you can kind of notice how the mind intersects that shape. So a lot of the practice for me also means self-study and self-reflection and coming back to the present again and again. And there's a lot of tools. Yoga is often associated with a special type of breathing. We call that pranayama. And the way you breathe really informs how the mind can stay present. And they say, like, if you control your breath, you really are kind of controlling your ability to find relaxation, to lower your stress hormones. So there's a lot of stuff available. For me, yoga that I teach, I try to present a lot of the options. And then, you know, you can totally just have a workout if that's where you're at. I come back because it's more than a workout.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's time for us to take a quick break. And stay tuned when we return. Jamie will share how the practice of yoga can shift your relationship with food and transform how you feel in your body. And please feel free to call in with any questions throughout the show. Our call-in number is 425-373-5527 or toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-KKNW. That's 5569. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll be right back.
Bend me, shape me any way you want me.
Passionate Nutrition offers a whole food and whole person approach to your health and wellness. Whether you're struggling with extra weight, low energy, or just want to feel your absolute best, Jennifer Adler and her Passionate Nutrition team are trained to help you every step of the way, from cooking to nutrition counseling. Located in 6 locations throughout the greater Seattle area, Passionate Nutrition has an office that's close to you. Visit PassionateNutrition.com to learn more about the nutrition services they provide, or give them a call at 206-595-0376.
June is National Hunger Awareness Month. Did you know that 1 in 4 children in our state don't get enough to eat? And during the summer, school breakfasts and lunches are not an option. Hi, I'm Gary Shipe, and every week on Spotlight, we bring you compelling conversation with local leaders. This week, we talk with Northwest Harvest about the huge effort taken every day to supply over 350 food banks across our state with ample and nutritious food. Join me to learn more on Spotlight, Sunday mornings at 5 on Alternative Talk, AM 1150, KKNW.
There's an exciting new astrology hour, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. with Deborah Silverman. Deborah's unique blend of psychology and astrology turns planetary language into plain English. Join us for an interactive hour that's guaranteed to give you personal insights in a fun and entertaining way. Tune in to Deborah Silverman Live. Whatever your life question, marriage, job, family, relocation, or just curiosity, call for a live reading Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and visit Deborah's website at DeborahSilvermanAstrology.com.
Spread the word. You don't have to settle for the usual talk radio. Now there's Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
Welcome back. You're listening to Passionate Nutrition Radio. I'm Jennifer Adler, your host and a nutritionist for more than a decade. I'm here with Jamie Silverstein, a U.S. Olympian in ice dancing and an eating disorder recovery advocate. She's also an ambassador for Lululemon and the owner of the Grinning Yogi Yoga Studio on Capitol Hill. So again, Jamie, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So let's talk yoga. How do you start your classes?
So for me, a lot of yoga, because I was talking about this idea of yoga by definition being about connection, I start my classes with where I'm at. Like this week, I was talking about this idea of how if you get so attached to the story of your day, you're going to be upset. I was explaining I made a bunch of copies of keys that didn't work, like a lot of very first world problems. And I was so attached to like, but then I'm going to have a 15-minute break. And I was really bumming myself out when nothing practically was wrong. And it's always something like that. It's what's going on in my life. It's something that we all kind of have experienced. And then how can I relate that to the practice? So I was reading from Pema Chodron this week, and I just love this quote. I might mess it up, but I'll try. She says that we need to pay more attention to not the movie, but actually to the projector, right? We need to pay more attention not to the details, but to how kind of our relationship to the details affects our mind. So I'll start with a story, and then we get moving. So often, just kind of being in the body can really settle the mind. I know that maybe people have heard of like a runner's high, but that idea of like a meditative, repetitive movement, and I just love yoga because it is so safe on the body, can really help you like let that movie narrative go a little bit. All of our classes have music. I was a skater, which we talked about a little bit, and being a skater for me, it was so easy to drop into my body through music. And so that's something I love to share with the class. And then at the end, I kind of bring us back to the theme and maybe have a suggestion about what does it feel like to notice that that story has dropped away, or where are you in this moment? Mindfulness is this really big buzzword. I feel like you see it in magazines and you see it on the internet. But for me, to be mindful is to be present. And so how can we practice being present?
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like throughout the class, what you're hoping is that people are really able to have a moment in time where they can get present with their bodies.
Completely. And you know, it's a struggle for me, too. I don't want to pretend that I'm present all the time. And so we talk about that, too. Like, I have been known to, like, call students out a little bit and be like, hey, where are you at right now? And it's totally with love. But this idea that it isn't something that comes naturally to us, and that's okay. I think there's a lot of shame nowadays when things don't come naturally, or when we're not doing as that movie tells us. And how can we kind of take that away and be like, you know what, I do that too. Because I am completely human. And for me, really embracing my life has been embracing that fact.
Mm-hmm. And what do you want people to take your class to walk away with?
My goal, which I say this in class a lot, is that they leave feeling better. Mm-hmm. If they don't, they should talk to me. They should talk to any of the awesome teachers that we have. But the idea of a yoga practice, especially, you know, circa now, is that this is a time that you've committed for yourself. And if you're not leaving feeling better, with self-care options kind of very limited nowadays, then let's talk about it. Let's figure out. And sometimes yoga is hard, and it's not a physical hard, but it's hard to confront that, like, this entire practice I was thinking about, you know, that my taxes are due or something like that. That actually did happen to me. But even that is being present, is being aware that your mind is taking you out of your experience. And once you've found that, it's really a challenge, but I feel like it's the first step to get to a more nourishing place of where you're at.
You know, and I love that you said that your goal is for everybody that walks away to feel good and feel better about themselves. And, you know, that's something actually at Passion Nutrition we talk about all the time. You know, we get together as a group, and one of the things that we're frequently talking about is how there's so much shame in the world of self-care, of nutrition, of fitness, everything. There's just so much shame. And I know that's our goal as well. When people come in, when they walk out the door, you know, we want them to feel better about themselves.
Yeah.
And feel empowered. And I think it's just something that's so missing.
I totally love that. And just speaking to that, I feel like for worse, so many businesses, so many messages, like in the mainstream nowadays, they say, like, let me show you what's wrong with you and how I can fix it. And a lot of the intention behind the classes I teach and my staff teaches is let me remind you that you're already okay, even if you're having a bad day. Or, you know, maybe for you guys, even if, you know, the meal plan isn't going, that doesn't mean that fundamentally there's anything wrong with you. And I feel like that's an uphill battle, but it's one we need to fight.
Right. It's when, you know, when people leave, we say, okay, so let's think of this as an experiment. So these are the changes to make in how you're eating, and then let's see what happens. But some things are going to work, some things aren't going to work. But it's interesting culturally how automatically, whether it's with fitness, whether it's nutrition, that our first inclination is to really blame ourselves. You know, what's wrong with me? What did I do wrong? How come this didn't work? That there's just this automatic ownership as women, when really, you know, that means that just the plan wasn't a fit for them.
Totally. I totally hear you. I've had a yoga student come up to me and say, like, I feel like I'm going to get in trouble because I don't like this. And I've been like, trouble by whom? Because my intention, like I told you, is that you connect. And if you don't like this and you've figured that out, that's awesome. Like, now we're one step closer to figuring out what you need or how I can help you.
Right. And as someone who has recovered from an eating disorder, what role did yoga play in your recovery?
Am I allowed to swear on radio?
I
probably shouldn't.
No.
I'm getting a nod. No, I feel like yoga called me out on my BS, to be honest. So a lot of times, because I was also a very serious athlete, you know, my coach and the culture of that was pushing one direction about, well, just be disciplined and just keep going. And I had some practices and I came in with that mindset like, oh, I'm going to be good at this. I'm a skater and I'm flexible and I can just push through anything. And I had some teachers that were like, today you're going to practice relaxing. Today you're going to sit in the class and stay in what we call child's pose, which is just kind of like a very restorative shape where you're on your hands and knees and you tuck down. And they said, you're going to stay there and other people around you are going to be moving. And that's okay because you've moved today and you don't need that. And we're all going to practice the things that we need, right? And that was really quite profound for me to not necessarily be told what I was doing, but to be afforded space to watch what I was doing. And then you have to, you know, kind of put on your big girl panties and say this is working or this isn't working.
You know, you had some really good teachers to know you personality-wise so well to be able to say, hey, today you're just going to do, you know, child's pose, basically lay on the ground while everybody else does poses.
I was really lucky, and I also, because I was around a lot, was able to cultivate, you know, relationships with people more so than like, oh, I've seen you in class and you're a number on my sheet. But actually, oh, how are you doing? How's skating going? And I feel like across the board in life, things get better when we're connected both to ourselves but also to other people.
Yes, it's so interesting. You know, at Passion Nutrition, we see that all the time because, you know, we really get to know the clients that we're working with very well. And I'm just thinking of a client yesterday who her goal when she left was over the next week, she's going to eat a root beer float that is made with real ice cream and real root beer, nothing sugar-free, nothing diet. And, you know, that's such an interesting recommendation to get. You know, she would never expect to walk away with that seeing a nutritionist. But that was more what she needed. You know, she needed that flexibility and that ability. You know, a lot of times we'll have something because we think we should, but then we have it sugar-free, fat-free, you know, diet, this and that. And really, it doesn't taste very good once you get all those frees added in there. So, you know, but just to have that homework of having a root beer float with her daughter and then enjoying it. You know, that's not typically what we expect, like going to a yoga class and doing child's pose or seeing a nutritionist and being told to eat ice cream.
Yeah, but I actually think it should become an expectation. I think the more people like yourself and people that I've met, the more people that can kind of come out and just endorse this idea of like what is nourishing doesn't necessarily have to be what our brain has decided is like the healthiest choice. Like so often for me, it's really nourishing to go out with girlfriends and have a cocktail. And yeah, I'm a yoga teacher and I've had a cocktail and maybe there are some, you know, people wagging their finger at me. But that's what's healthy for me in that moment. That's how, you know, I might relax once a week or something.
Well, and that just shows flexibility and joy with life. And, you know, because the more rigid we get in life, we get rigid in exercise, then the more rigid we get in life. You know, and that takes away a lot of that joy and nourishment and spontaneity.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I feel like we have a tendency to make ourselves good or bad or right or wrong. And if the rules aren't there and if we are flexible, then, you know, there's a lot less shame involved.
And so, Jamie, what do you recommend to individuals or to parents who are struggling with an eating disorder, either personally or say that there's somebody that they love in their life that does have an eating disorder?
My big recommendation is that you actually listen. The big cliche I feel like that a lot of people come into contact with is people trying to manage people's food. And there's professionals like yourself that help with that. And so often, you know, my understanding is any kind of way that we're acting out in food or acting out in exercise, it's a symptom. It's a symptom that something isn't being heard and you got to pay attention, which is why I love yoga, because the practice is paying attention. So if you know someone that's suffering or if you yourself are suffering, then how can I connect and how can I be vulnerable? You know, a lot of recovery happens when you are vulnerable and when you let the shame kind of go away and it's less secretive. And then sometimes the symptoms fall away. I don't know what your experience has been. Obviously, some people need medical intervention. But I really feel like unless you're one of those people doing the medical intervention, the best way you can support is to be supportive, which means you don't necessarily know what's right, but you do have an ear to listen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's time for us to take another break, but I just wanted to mention before we did go to the break that the Seaweed 101 and Wild Foods 101 workshops that we're offering this summer on Lopez Island, where we show you how to make all kinds of do-it-yourself beauty products, nettle hair tonic, herbal tinctures, nourishing seaweed masks, as well as learning how to cook with these foods. And you walk away with enough seaweed to last you for, I mean, I run into people years later that still have seaweed. Well, all of our classes are sold out except for July. And so for July, we are offering 25% off these workshops. So if you want to sign up, then go ahead and go to our website, passionatenutrition.com. And it's already set up for the 25% off. So when we return, we'll talk more about shifting our relationship with food and transforming how you feel in your body. And please feel free to call in with any questions throughout the show. 425-373-5527. We'll be right back.
Passionate Nutrition offers a whole food and whole person approach to your health and wellness. Whether you're struggling with extra weight, low energy, or just want to feel your absolute best, Jennifer Adler and her Passionate Nutrition team are trained to help you every step of the way, from cooking to nutrition counseling. Located in 6 locations throughout the greater Seattle area, Passionate Nutrition has an office that's close to you. Visit PassionateNutrition.com to learn more about the nutrition services they provide or give them a call at 206-595-0376.
Hi, I'm Pat Pauly. Tune into my show, Get Active, each Tuesday at 12 noon on Alternative Talk, 1150. Each week, we invite a guest to talk about one of the wonderful activities in the Puget Sound region, ones that you may want to participate in. We'll focus on how adult beginners can comfortably get into all of these activities. You'll learn a lot about how you can get active. Be sure to listen. That's Get Active with me, Pat Pauly, at 12 noon each Tuesday on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Hi, I'm Martha Childress with the Natural Choice Network. Join us every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150. Each week, we invite leaders from our sustainable community to share their unique visions and valuable insights. You'll learn great tools to make your life greener, healthier, and more sustainable for generations to come. Thank you for making the natural choice. That's the Natural Choice Network, every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Please join us.
Write it down, shout it loud. Alternative Talk, 11:50 a.m. Now, wasn't that fun?
Strike the pose. Welcome back. You're listening to Passionate Nutrition Radio. I'm Jennifer Adler, your host and a nutritionist for more than a decade. I'm here with Jamie Silverstein, an Olympian in ice dancing, an eating disorder recovery advocate. So, Jamie, thank you again for being here. Okay, so before we left, we were talking about people with eating disorders and what those that love them can do. And in your opinion, I mean, just from what you've seen with yourself and also for, you know, clients that you've had as a yoga instructor, do you think, is it possible for individuals to heal from an eating disorder? And even though, and also we say eating disorder, but really that's the extreme version. I mean, probably women, it'd be hard to find a woman in the U.S. that doesn't have some type of eating or body issue to some extent. So,
yeah, no, I was nodding. I feel like hope it has to always be there, you know, and there's a lot of kind of cultural messages that I feel like we're struggling with, but hope is there. Recovery means different things for different people, obviously, and ultimately you're talking about a question of self-love and of body love, and how do I, who I am, you know, outside of my body and outside of all of these things, just show up. One of the things that I love about a yoga teaching is it says, you know, I'm not my thoughts, but I'm going to think. And I'm not my body, but I have this body. And for me, so much about finding body love is this idea of, well, if I can put a little bit of space between myself and my body from day to day, then I can really take an opportunity to take care of it. I had a student that once kind of described it as like a pet. If you think of your body as a pet that, you know, you just are happy to come home to, and you give a treat now and then, and you rub and you love, right? You love this thing. But so often I feel like we just show up because we have a body, and then we decide we are that thing. And it's a big challenge. It's a big challenge because our bodies are going to change. And that's pretty human. That's pretty healthy.
It's true. And the thing is, these issues can get so deeply ingrained, and then they get passed down from mother to daughter and culturally all along the way. So it's nice that there is hope as far as how things can shift.
Yeah. But to be honest, I think the shift has to come from, you know, all of us who see it, all of us who are struggling, just being honest with where we're at and kind of taking some of the shame away. I read a really beautiful essay on the Huffington Post just recently, and the mother talked about how her little daughter came up and said, like, mommy, I'm fat. And the mother was heartbroken. And it ended with the idea that the two of them were, like, dancing naked as powerful women. And I feel like those examples need to come out more and more.
Actually, I loved that article, and I posted it. There's a Passion Nutrition Facebook page, and it's on there.
Yeah, it's so amazing, that article.
Yeah, it was really good. And, you know, wouldn't that be amazing if there was so much more of that embracing and dancing and celebrating our bodies instead of continually ridiculing it?
Yeah, I think that's so necessary.
Now, Jamie, how has your relationship with food and nutrition, how has it shifted over the years?
It's shifted a lot. So when I was an athlete, and this is part of the reason I think my eating disorder developed, there was a lot of kind of controlling across the board in how we physically were meant to look and in how our day was scheduled. And then for me, and for me to find my own balance, I definitely swung the opposite direction, which I needed to at the time. When I was in Ithaca, I was working for an IOP, an intensive outpatient program, again, in this recovery, eating disorder recovery field. And one of our staff members used to always talk about how there is no such thing as a bad food. And the more we can kind of get away from that, then the healthier we can really become in our mind, and our body will follow. And so for me, I swung into all of these things that maybe at times I had a really terse relationship with. And then kind of unpacking the story around it, right, that narrative around it, I was able to see, well, this feels good for me and this doesn't feel good for me. And it's coming into balance. It's the yoga of eating, if you will.
And it's true. I mean, that's something that we often talk about at Passionate Nutrition is how, you know, there are no bad foods. You know, there's not these inherently evil foods that are out there plotting to take over the world. And, you know, we just have such a good and bad category that it's just there's foods that we have some of the time, and then there's foods that we have a lot more of the time. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, when people come in, they think that we're going to take everything away. You know,
oh, no.
They think that, you know, a lot of times we'll ask, so we need to get an idea of a typical day of eating. So what did you eat yesterday? Do you remember? And they'll say, well, I knew I was going to come see you, so I had vodka, I had pizza, I had ice cream because I knew you were going to take it all away. And, you know, people really have that perception because they feel like foods are good and bad, but then also they're good and bad for eating those. And they really do a lot of projecting in terms of, you know, that we're going to be mad or say that these foods are off limits.
Totally. And I feel like I hear that a lot, and I hear that a lot with yoga too. Like, I've been bad, I haven't been to yoga all week. And the idea that how you would understand yourself based on, you know, the choices you make, like just kind of looking at that idea, like if you're doing things that are good for you that week and you haven't made it in, awesome, you know. And even if you're doing things that don't feel for good for you and then you come back, that's awesome too. But this idea that what we do or the way we eat and the way kind of we relate to ourselves and then really put ourselves on a leash or make ourselves good or bad just feels like something that we need to look at.
And how would you say that nutrition and yoga are interrelated?
That's a good question. It's interesting because there's also a movement, and you might be aware of this, but there's like a movement in the field of yoga, like circa now, like a lot of kind of manipulation of nutrition that to my mind that's been through recovery really feels a little bit toxic. And this brings me back to what my idea of yoga is, which is connection. Right. And if you're connected to your body, then you're better able to understand like what you're hungry for and what you're not hungry for. And yeah, maybe today I'm having a cookie because I'm a little bit emotionally overwhelmed. And it's something I'm still working on and something I'm still learning. Like, how can I actually ask myself, what do I need right now? And also, if I need a cookie because I'm overwhelmed, having that be okay. So that's yoga and nutrition for me.
And it is. Helping people to even get into touch with what they want and what they're even hungry for is often really big. A lot of times we'll work with clients on that and we'll say, well, if you could have your absolute perfect lunch, what would that look like? And a lot of times people don't know. You know, those things have been so ingrained that they're not listening to their body to what they want, but it's more what they should have. What has this many calories? You know, What are they not going to feel guilty about? When really learning to listen to that voice within us, there's so much wisdom there.
I feel like that is so true. I feel like for myself, and it still happens nowadays, my sweetie teases me, but I'll be like, I don't know what I actually want right now, because I had to go through this whole process of letting everything be valid and nourishing for me, even if it was something that maybe we decided once upon a time was bad. So then it's like, it can be overwhelming just being like, wow, I can have whatever I want. And then the practice of connecting and the practice of being present, and that all helps. Mm-hmm. So I feel like yoga is a great asset to understanding how you eat, to understanding how you think, to just kind of understanding yourself.
Right. Yeah, to have more of that connection with ourselves. You know, it's interesting because I can hear, actually, our listeners out there, many of them are saying, wait, but what if all I want is chocolate? And that's all I want, you know, and it's interesting. Actually, this morning, you know, I was working with some of the new passionate nutritionists that are coming on board. And actually, one of our big topics today was cravings and how whenever we have cravings, there's actually a reason why it's there. You know, that knowing what people crave is like gold, because that often points to what's going on and what they're missing and why those cravings are set up.
I feel like that's 100% correct. And for me, like I've been that listener that's like, well, I can't have chocolate because then I'm going to have chocolate, you know, 7 meals, 7 days a week, which is probably more meals than you need. No, less meals than you need. There we go. I'm not very good at math. But, you know, in my experience, once we have what we need, once we actually have that thing we really need, it goes away. And if it doesn't go away, then there's a lot of really insightful questions to ask. Be it, you know, how else are you nourishing yourself physically? It might be what's going on in your life. What's going on in your life that there's not sweetness there? Mm-hmm. But a little craving for a piece of something, I feel like, is good information that you know your body that well.
Right. And, you know, I'm thinking of a client, actually, that we just had our second appointment with her yesterday. And so the first time she came in, she really wanted to talk about her obsession with food. You know, she couldn't stop thinking about it. She felt like she was continually overeating and feeling badly about herself and really guilty. You know, she was a high profile professional woman that just thought, oh my gosh, I'm so successful in my life. And what is it that I have no willpower around this? Well, when we went through a typical day for her and how she was eating, it was really blaringly apparent to us why this was going on. You know, so what we talked with her about is we said, okay, so this really key group of nutrients is completely missing from your diet. So let's add these back in and let's see next time. So we had the follow-up with her yesterday and she said it was amazing. You know, how immediately when she added these foods into her diet that the cravings, the obsession. I mean, she would find herself going 5 hours without eating and think, oh no, I need to eat, where she had not done that in years and years and years. But see, what happens is our first inclination as women is to beat ourselves up. You know, she was really thinking that there was something wrong with her, as opposed to thinking about, wait, there could really be a physiological component here as to why I crave what I do.
Totally. I totally agree with that. And that's why, you know, in my mind, I feel like even disordered eating or eating disorders, they're more symptoms, right? This thing is perpetually going on, and we keep on making it harder for ourselves because we've decided it's who we are. But as soon as you can, like you did with this client, kind of unlock maybe what's missing or what needs a little love, then the symptoms can become less scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sure you say that a lot with the students that you work with yoga.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a matter of, can I unlock what's really happening right now? Just getting off autopilot and getting off of the habit, for mm-hmm. sure.
And, you know, it's interesting because both with yoga and then also in the nutrition world, you know, we end up seeing a really diverse group of clients. And the thing is, having the experiences that we have and the background, you know, that really gives us a lot of success in working with people with body image issues and with eating disorders, or, you know, people that are wanting to lose weight in a healthy way and not get obsessive about it or have it turn into a really, you know, a not healthy approach to weight loss, which we see all around us.
Mm.
Yeah. So what we do is help people suffering with body image issues or challenges with their food change the way they think about food and shift their behaviors. Now, it's time for us to take a quick break, and stay tuned. When we return, Jamie will share some more valuable tips on body love. And as always, please feel free to call with any questions at any time throughout the show. We'd love to hear your stories and your tips. Our call-in number is 425-373-5527, or toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-KKNW. That's 5569. We'll be right back.
There's only one thing that they all like, a bunch of girls, they want to have lunch.
Passionate Nutrition offers a whole food and whole person approach to your health and wellness. Whether you're struggling with extra weight, low energy, or just want to feel your absolute best, Jennifer Adler and her Passionate Nutrition team are trained to help you every step of the way, from cooking to nutrition counseling. Located in 6 locations throughout the greater Seattle area, Passionate Nutrition has an office that's close to you. Visit PassionateNutrition.com to learn more about the nutrition services they provide, or give them a call at 206-595-0376.
This is your boy 50 Cent, and I'm here with Scott.
Hi there.
Scott's a true family man, but he might not catch your attention right away, so I'm lending my voice. Now, what happened, Scott?
Well, 50, I never thought it would be me. I was just your everyday, middle-class working American. But then I lost my job and still had a family of four to feed. I was afraid. You know, I was expecting people to be judgmental about me needing help, but I didn't run into any of that. The food bank is about more than just meals. It's about encouraging and helping people when they need it most.
Today, 1 in 6 Americans don't know where their next meal is coming from. Scott here could be your neighbor, your coworker, your friend. He's just like you, and you probably don't even know he's struggling. But you can make a difference in Scott's life today. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find a local food bank to help.
I'm Scott.
And I'm 50 Cent. Together, we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
1150KKNW.com, your connection to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Passionate Nutrition Radio. I'm Jennifer Adler, your host and a nutritionist for more than a decade. I'm here with Jamie Silverstein, a U.S. Olympian in ice dancing and an eating disorder recovery advocate.
I hope I'm not an addict, but I guess that's not a bad thing to be addicted to.
Right.
Taking care.
And also, she's owner of the Grinning Yogi Yoga Studio on Capitol Hill. So, Jamie, what are the top three things that we can do as individuals to bring more body love and acceptance into our daily life?
You know what? I feel like this is the money question. How do I love myself? How do I practice self-care? And this is something that I I think a lot about. I had this discussion with one of my friends the other day, like, how can I practice self-care without spending a bunch of money or doing, you know, these kind of things that maybe for a moment feel nice, but are so much, again, drawing awareness back to the body, you know, because traditionally you hear like, oh, go get a massage or go paint your nails. And that's a wonderful kind of expression of gratitude. But the real idea of how can I be okay with where I'm at right now, I feel like is a little more nuanced. So I feel like this is a hard question, you know, and a lot of it for me is much more conversational and being vulnerable and saying, this is coming up for me. And, you know, taking the shame out. I don't know if you've heard of Brené Brown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I love her.
I love her. And she talks so much about the second that we're vulnerable and the second that we say, like, you know, today I got really mad at myself because I didn't like how my pants fit, is the second that we can actually offer ourselves a little bit of care. And it comes up in yoga, too. It comes up in the practice when your brain starts doing this thing like, but yesterday I could do this pose. Yesterday, you know, I could touch my toes. And today I'm really, really stiff. And then making it like something bad is happening. And the second you say, you know, to a teacher or to a friend, like, that class was really hard, I was being mean to myself, is the second that I believe you're actually starting to do real body love.
You know, Jamie, I so agree with you in terms of the shame piece, especially. You know, I know that that's something that we see a lot at Passion Nutrition. You know, I'm thinking of this one client in particular that came in, and she didn't even want to come in the room. I mean, I could tell. She was so stiff and so really looked terrified to mm-hmm. be there. And she had struggled with bulimia, you know, 25 years, maybe more, actually, now that I think about it. And she came in, and that entire first appointment, you know, one of the things we talked about was why the bulimia was there, like in the sense like it was there to take care of her and it was okay. And of course she would do this. And, you know, it's just we can come up with other methods and other coping behaviors so that it doesn't have to be just all about the bulimia. And, you know, it was so interesting because I got she was referred by her therapist, and her therapist, you know, emailed us and said, I don't know what you did with her, but she drastically cut down on her binging and purging between the time she saw you and she came in to see me. And I think it was partly coming to a nutritionist when she expected to have so much shame and so much judgment against her, to have compassion and understanding and to feel that hope. Like the shame, I really believe that that's what it was, because really we didn't do that much magic.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like what you're saying is something we can all practice, you know, to each other, to our friends, this idea of the idea that you're going to wake up and never, you know, look at your body with a cross-eyed glance, or never kind of have this snap thought like, I shouldn't or I have to, it's a magical thought. I would love to be there. I'm not there right now. But what I can do is go like, I trust you. This happened. And for me, that's me taking care of my body. That's me taking care of my mind, so that I'm not trying to pretend that I'm something that I'm not. And I'm just myself.
And how do you actively work to feel good in your own skin?
So I practice a lot of yoga, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm working out all the time. I do think that it's important just to notice when something is becoming a should, or, you know, for me, and you're probably familiar with this with eating disorder treatment, even our outlets that are healthy for us can kind of be manipulated. So sometimes it's really nice to go for a walk or to go for a short jog. If I'm telling myself I have to every day, or I have to unroll myself on the mat every day, then that's something I want to look at. And then a lot of it is, again, giving myself permission to not have to do anything, you know. And then there's sweet things that you can do every day. I like to have a cup of tea. I like to make sure I connect to a friend every day. Those are things that nourish me, but those might not be the things that nourish you.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And also those things, like what you said at the beginning there, that, you know, the things that nourish us can also become kind of go too far almost. And that happens all the time, even whether it's exercise or healthy eating or whatever it is. We see that where when it becomes like you have to do it every day, like even if it's eating broccoli, if you have to eat broccoli every day, you know, it's a good thing to question.
I think that's so true. One of the teachings of yoga is this teaching of non-attachment, where you start to kind of look at what's happening, but you also, all you have to do is show up, and you let go of kind of the outcome. There's this word which I love called swaha, right? And it says you're going to put the right effort in, but you're going to let go of the outcome. So then, you know, maybe the right effort is not eating broccoli every day, but you know, having some vegetables that you need. And then you kind of can also distance yourself from whatever is going to happen because you showed up.
Mm-hmm. And do body love issues, in your experience, only affect people with eating disorders? Or does the issue impact everyone on a certain degree?
Oh, my gosh. I think the issue impacts everyone. I want to meet this, like, holy grail of a person that, you know, doesn't, you know, fall into some of these cultural traps that happen. I feel like there's just so many messages out there that are very limited in scope that say, like, this is beautiful, this is toned, this is a healthy something. And I think it's really hard to be that strong in mind for your entire life to not kind of see a mirror and reflect yourself in it and go, but wait, you know? But quite honestly, we just don't need the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't need the mirror. So if you're out there and you're listening, or, you know, if this is just something that happens for your life, this is something my friends and I talk about all the time. Like, I feel like it's very hard just as a person to be like, I love myself. and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the struggle.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any upcoming workshops that you want to share with our listeners?
I do. I'm doing a workshop at the Grinning Yogi, actually here in Capitol Hill, with an artist and art therapist friend of mine who also specifically works in eating disorder recovery. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at the body more creatively. So she's going to facilitate some art making, but lots of different tools to say, like, oh, I feel something in my shoulder, that as opposed to making it about, like, oh, my shoulder needs to be fixed. Like, well, energetically, what happens there? You know, if your chest is tight, or if you're protecting your posture, a lot of those are cues much more to your emotional body than to your physical body. And then there'll be some yoga with that. And that's at the end of the month.
Great. And so early detection of an eating disorder is something that can really save lives and aid in long-term recovery. And it also helps offer individuals the tools they need to make change happen. And though eating disorders can be difficult to detect early on, there's a lot of signs that parents and teachers and loved ones can really look for. So some examples are things like dramatic weight loss, avoiding meals or situations where food can be present, dressing in layers to hide weight loss, or getting really preoccupied with weight or food or calories or fat grams or dieting. Because actually how a lot of eating disorders start is that it starts out from a diet that just ends up going too far. Or also refusing to eat certain foods, or, you know, entire categories of foods, like, for example, no carbohydrates. Or if someone is starting to deny that they're even feeling hungry, or just overly obsessing about calorie intake or calories burned, versus the amount of exercise, even, you know, getting withdrawn. I mean, that's actually a really big one, withdrawn from friends and activities and just becoming more isolated and secretive. So these are some of the things to look for, you know, in terms of helping to get support. And at Passion and Nutrition, we really give our clients the tools and resources they need to move on with their life. And we give really practical and comprehensive approach and specialize in working with people with eating disorders. And with that, Jamie, is there anything else that you would share in terms of for what people should look for?
I think you hit on a lot of the big ones. I think in general, it's changes in temperament. Obviously, a lot of times things show up around food behaviors, but changes in temperament. And then I would say if you think someone is struggling, instead of asking them specifically maybe what's happening with the food, just ask them how they're doing, right? Let it be a space that feels a little bit safer so they can be vulnerable. Because so often if people are afraid of an eating disorder symptom and you start to talk about the symptom, there's a lot of attachment there.
Mm-hmm.
So ask how they're doing. I think the social component is so important, being able to be connected even when maybe you're not feeling your best.
Yeah, and I would also add in there too, like, not necessarily, you don't even have to say the word eating disorder to someone. You can just say, are you struggling? It seems like you might be struggling with food. Or actually, a lot of times we meet with clients that we would classify as having an eating disorder and we never even use that term.
Mm.
You know, we just talk about, it sounds like you're really struggling right now. And this is, you know, these are the steps we can take, because we can accomplish the same goals without ever using that term, because that term is really loaded.
Completely, yeah. I feel like labels in general are something, you know, that we can try to step away from and come back to this holistic idea of a person. And if there's struggle going on, I really do deeply believe that you can get past that. It doesn't mean that your life is suddenly going to be roses, because sometimes it's just not the best day. But this idea that you are so trapped, I feel like that can be healed.
And so just lastly, I want to mention to people that remember for the July Seaweed 101 and Wild Foods 101 workshops, we're offering 25% off. So feel free to go to our website, passionatenutrition.com, to find out more information and also to sign up. And just so you know, the last 3 years, we've had food critics on the trip because the food is so delicious.
That sounds amazing.
We were even written up in Epicurious, so that's good. Now, Jamie, thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing your insights and compassion on this topic. It's really been a pleasure having you on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's been great.
And then please join us next week for Passionate Nutrition Radio. We'll be talking about easy and delicious ways to boost your metabolism. And so tune in next week and we'll share some of our favorite, most powerful metabolism-boosting foods. And once again, to learn more about Passionate Nutrition or our nutrition counseling services, which most often are covered by insurance, please visit us at PassionateNutrition.com. Have a great week.
My vegetables are